in neurochemistry from the University of London and founded his own lab, the Quantum Biology Research Lab. Glenn is the author of the book Quantum Biology, Healing with Subtle Energy, and is the author or co-author of 4 patents, 25 papers on bioelectromagnetics, and over 40 articles in biochemistry, neuroscience, and pharmacology. He is the founder and CEO of Innovated Biophysical Technologies, a new subsidiary of the QBRL, which offers individualized biochemical and biophysical contract research services. He has lectured internationally and has made numerous media appearances on radio and TV. Glenn is on a number of scientific and editorial boards, including the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine and Temple University Frontier Sciences. Please welcome Glenn Raine.
Da-da-da. Okay. Wow, this feels like I'm in Shiva land here with all this meditation stuff. Cool. Where should I stand to get out of the light? There is no such thing. I'm going to start where people are wandering in. And thank everybody for coming and hanging in there for the very last speaker of the conference. And I gather there's a lot of interest in water, and Dan had asked me to talk about water and my previous talk about the life force, but I'm going to talk about some conceptual stuff about water and then some original research with two companies that I'm involved with. And I guess, you know, the main topic to consider, it's kind of cool, I can look at it right here and look at you at the same time. I don't actually have to, you know, talk out of the mouth in the back of my head, all right, so that's cool. But I kind of want to go into the audience, you know, but I guess, you know, I'm not supposed to do that, right? Stand on the stage. Okay, so, you know, there's been a lot of interest in this conference about water, and I want to just give a general overview, I guess, because, you know, a lot of people don't even, farmers don't even consider that the quality of the water is important. And I gather the vibe from the audience here is that the quality is one thing, but the actual, and most people think of quality in terms of the chemical toxins that are left in the water. And, you know, you don't want to give those to the plants and the food that we eat. But the water is actually a carrier of energy as much as it is a carrier of minerals and vitamins and nutrients. And kind of that's what I want to focus on today, because the quality of water is one thing, but the vitality of the water, if you will, is as important. And it's worth mentioning right from the start that even when you filter out the chemicals and remove the chemicals from the water, that the energy imprint of the chemicals remains behind. So every chemical has an energy signature associated with it by the laws of physics. And that information of the chemical, in this case a toxin, will be imprinted into the water. So even though you remove the chemical from the water, the information signature of the chemical remains behind and can have as much detrimental effect on the plant as the actual chemical. So that's the first take-home message. And anybody who is coming in late is going to miss the take-home message, but that's okay, because I'll probably say it again. So that's an important concept. But in general, speaking about water, we have this phenomenon called living water, as in nature. And I guess, does anybody in this audience not know who Victor Schauberger is? You see, so we got, oh, two people, three, four, five, oh, a few, okay. So normally I would say, well, then let me go back and explain all that, but this time, for the limited amount of time I have, I'm going to just say, tough, read about him. I'm not going to have the time to explain all of Victor Schauberger's work, but other than to say that he was the guy who realized that water in nature, like in the slide, does not equal to the water that comes out of our tap, And of course, actually, the farmers in this group probably don't use tap water. They use well water and special water. But the point being that natural water, living water, is really the best source of water to use for our plants. And that's obtained in nature by vortexing and moving water over rocks and minerals. And that the process of doing that movement in nature causes the water to structure. And structuring of water was already discussed by Phil yesterday. And how many people heard his talk? Just most people. You say, oh, good, so I don't have to repeat that. I don't have to say tough again, right? I can just say, great, we're on the same page. Because structured water, it's worth clarifying, though, that structuring of water is one of many things you can do with water. And I'm going to talk about putting energy and information into water, which may be structured or not, but there are really two completely separate concepts in essence, although they're related. But you can structure the water, which means you can form clusters, water clusters, around the minerals and ions that are naturally present. And that structuring of the water is very important to allow the minerals to get into the cells. But if the structuring is too large, and you can have enormously complex organizations of water molecules around a mineral, if that structuring is so large, it can't get through the cell membrane. So ideally, you want clustering and structuring, but you don't want too much, or the ions won't be able to get into the cell membrane. But it is an important distinction that this kind of living water is really the optimal water to use for our growing of plants. So I said all that. I said that. Well, pretty good for an introduction, huh? Okay, so now I want to talk about here we're mentioning the fact that electromagnetic energy in the environment and sunlight are two different sources of energies in the environment that can influence water and store the information into the water. And, of course, the last one, yeah, sacred land. If you happen to be growing on sacred land, then you're going to get information from the land and from the soil, which can also store and carry information to the water and then to the plant. So, in other words, the information in the water can either come from the environment, it could either come from chemicals in the environment, from electromagnetic fields in the environment, from the sun, or from the people in the environment. And that's a topic that maybe I'll get to speak on next year, but the consciousness of the farmer and the person who's actually growing the plants can also be picked up by the water and stored in the water. So that raises the question, how do you get rid of the information in water before you imprint it with new information? Because some of the information in the environment is negative. I mean, ultraviolet light is that's actually for plants, that's good. But certainly chemicals and toxins, as I said earlier, and, you know, bad intentions can have a detrimental effect, as well as good intentions having a beneficial effect. So one of the first things we have to do is to be able to clear out all the stored information from the water that's already there. And probably the easiest way to do that is to boil the water, because information above about 70 degrees treatment will dissipate the information and then clear it out. Another way to do that is with crystals, because crystals will absorb all the energy in the water and then clean it and then remove the crystal. And you've got to clean the crystal with salt water, for example, and then you can remove some of the negative imprints in the environment. Like here's some good examples of contaminants in water that would be considered harmful, of course, not organics. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean, toxic things like, these are not all contaminants. Some of these are good. Microbes are good. They can be good. They can be bad. So inorganic chemicals could be good and bad. radioactivity, that's probably not something you want to have, certainly in the food or in the growing process. But these are just some examples of chemicals that I already mentioned. Okay, so now when it gets down to actual treatment procedures, there are many different kinds of energies that we can put in the water. And electromagnetic energies is one clear method that has been used a lot, whether it's an electric field or a magnetic field or an electromagnetic field. And the differences are subtle, but nonetheless, they do carry different information by themselves. And in the case of an electromagnetic field, the information is in the frequencies and the phase of the electromagnetic field. But frequency information is the one that's been studied scientifically most and has been used to actually improve the quality of plants and humans, for that matter. In fact, it was discovered in the scientific community called bioelectromagnetics. This is this group of scientists who study the effects of electromagnetic fields on biological systems. Well, some brilliant Russian scientist said, well, maybe the effects are mediated by water because all biological systems are surrounded by water. And if you expose some cells, whatever kind of plant cells, human cells, whatever, to an electromagnetic field in vitro, in a Petri dish, it's surrounded by water. So, gee, maybe the water is somehow or other mediating this whole effect. So they decided to treat the water first and then give the water to the plant. Now, in order for that even phenomena to occur, you have to deal with this phenomena called water memory. The ability of water to remember the influences that are impinged on it. So if it, in this case, we're talking an electromagnetic field. You treat water with an electromagnetic field, and you will change the properties of the water. You'll change the physical properties of the water. Is that right? Oh, here it is, the next slide. Good thinking. Right. Okay, so these are all of the various physical properties that can be altered when you treat water. Well, but the cool phenomena is that when you turn off the electromagnetic field, these changes can last for weeks and even months. And that phenomena is called water memory, and is distinct from all other types of electromagnetic treatment, where as soon as you turn off the electromagnetic field, whatever you're measuring, you know, dissipates and goes back down to zero. So electromagnetic field treatment of water is now a well-established phenomena and is used in the scientific community, and maybe some of you guys are treating using water treated with electromagnetic fields or even magnetic fields, because just the act of putting two magnets on either side of a tube that's got water going to the field can have a dramatic effect on the outcome of the crop. So, okay, so that's, we're going back to this slide here. So we've got the first three bullets, two and a half, because the first one isn't really a bullet. Well, it's a round bullet. The other one's a square. When the hell that happened? Anyway, the point is that in addition to electromagnetic fields, light is another important way to stimulate water. And laser light, being very coherent, is probably the most effective way. And nowadays, you can buy laser lights, and you can modulate them at a specific frequency and impart that energy into the water. In the same way, sound energy can also be used to treat water and to structure the water and to affect the outgrowth of the plants. So those are the particular methods, and I'm going to talk about some of those methods in a minute. This is a good example the picture here is a picture of a water cluster. In the middle, you would, that's not the arrow. In the middle, you would find a magnesium or a calcium ion, and all these water molecules are clustered around that charged ion, whether it's positive or negative. So they just, and again, the point I was making before was the size of that. I mean, that's big because I blew it up, but I mean, it's big. It's really small, but it's got to be so small that it'll go through the pores in the membrane. That was the point that I was trying to make. Okay, so we covered this, and now we're going to look at some little more detail about electromagnetic field effects. So we've talked about the water memory, direct treatment of the water. We've discussed that. Frequency information. Hey, great. We pretty much covered the whole thing. Now, the electromagnetic field treated water can affect different parts of the plant depending on what frequencies you use. Now, a lot of this is not really validated scientifically, but I had a colleague once who had figured all this stuff out, and he knew exactly what frequencies to use if you wanted to stimulate the root system, and a different set of frequencies if you wanted to think the flower, and a different set of frequencies if you wanted the total yield of your crop to be increased. So in reality, the specificity is obtained by the frequency information, which will target different parts of the growth cycle and different parts of the plant. And you know, the best thing I can say at this point is to use your intuition, but that has not really been worked out scientifically. Okay, so that was the introduction. Now I want to go into two studies with two companies that I work for who have used this technology I just described in a grow situation. And this company called Sonify is based in Northern California, where we primarily analyze frequencies in the human body by looking at the frequencies in the voice and correlating those frequencies with missing frequencies of biochemicals in your body. But that's the mainstream. And then we had an investor come in and tell us, well, if you can apply the frequencies that you guys are using to growing plants, we'd all be very interested. So we built two sheds, identical sheds, and controlled the temperature, the humidity, all the environmental factors, so that they're the same. And one, this was hydroponically grown, and that may be a no-no in this community. We'll talk about hydroponics. Okay. But it was done that way. And I don't know why they didn't want to use soil. There's a lot of lectures here on soil. I don't see a lot of lectures on hydroponics. But anyway, that's what we decided to do because we're putting frequencies in the water. So if you got the roots in the water, then the roots are soaking up the frequencies and, you know, bingo, you get the plants to grow. Of course, it also works if you water soil, and then the water in the soil will be taken up by the plants, but we were going for broke here. So it was hydroponically grown. Half of the, one shed had frequency-treated water, and the other shed had regular water. The nutrient content was not the same. We used half as much nutrients in the treated shed because we wanted to be able to we were thinking about using no nutrients, but that would have been holy grail because, in principle, the frequencies of these that we're using could be the corresponding frequencies of the nutrients themselves. So, in principle, you don't even need the chemicals at all. But in reality, you probably need a little bit of chemicals, and maybe you can do the rest with information and frequencies. So we decided, as a compromise, we'll put in half as much. We used special high-pressure sodium grow lights and an ebb and flow hydroponic system. The frequencies are proprietary, and then we used some proprietary electrolytes as well. So this is the gestalt of the system, and what we did ultimately was to measure the growth, the yield, and the biochemical content of the final product to see if there were differences. And there were. And here's just a bad picture of the... do I have a pointer on this? I guess maybe one of these things might be a pointer. Ugh. Well, that's not a pointer. All right, never mind that. You can see in the left picture on the lower right corner and in the larger picture, the whole right side is the treated plant and that little putzy little thing there, and the left side is the untreated plant or the control plant. So there were large differences in growth in the beginning, for sure, and then eventually, after 3 months of growing, they kind of, controls caught up with the treated ones. But nonetheless, in the end, we still, oh God, I blew the wrong button. If I press that, can I get rid of that button? Ah, good. Okay, so here's another picture of the grow room on the right. The plants are just much more bushy. They, as I said, the height ended up being the same pretty much at the end, but they were a lot thicker and bushier. And here's some of here's the nutrient, showing you the frequency room at half as much nutrients in terms of parts per million at the time of harvest. And here's the total yield of the flower, which is an 80% increase in the buds, in the weight of the buds. And here's the chemical constituents in the control and treated room, and you can see that some of these aromatic compounds increased anywhere between 80% and 250%. And as I said before, in principle, with the right frequencies, you can change these relative ratios of the ingredients. So you could stimulate, if you wanted to really increase the pinene, well, that was pretty effective. Phenol is relatively not stimulated compared to linalool. But if you change the frequencies, you can change that ratio and preferentially stimulate one kind of chemical constituent over another. Unfortunately, the science of that hasn't been worked out yet. So our frequencies were not designed to target a specific part of the plant or a specific chemical constituent of the plant. But nonetheless, we still got very large increases. Now, it's worth mentioning in this particular study, the water was not treated just with an electromagnetic field, but with light, sound, electromagnetism, and even plasma energy. So it was. We gave it the whole kitchen sink approach because we didn't really know which of those. We had the frequencies, but we didn't know which delivery method would work best, so we used them all. Kitchen sink approach. Okay, so, the other thing worth mentioning is that we actually had the mold and mildew analyzed by a company called Pure Analytics, and there was no pesticides and herbicides used in the treated room, and still there were no mildew or mildew formed during the grow, and partly because we had very specific frequencies that correspond to these chemicals that we use instead of the chemicals, as I was talking about earlier. So we were, I don't know whether mold would have grown. It's one of those kind of philosophical questions. You know, if you look at a tree in the forest, if you don't look at the tree, is it still there? If you don't use the pesticides, will it still work? So anyway, the point is that there were no mold and mildew at the end of the experiment. Okay, that was experiment number one. Experiment number two is by a company called Fractum, which is located in Lithuania. And they, these young men, read some obscure Russian article, which had been long forgotten. And in the article, they described a device that if you build a device, treat the water, and then grow your crops, you can increase the crop yield by 30, 40%. And they thought that was really cool. So they built a device, they had it tested, and they did several different types of grow studies on different types of fields in water that was treated for 50 minutes with the electromagnetic field. It was diluted 1 to 1,000, and then it was sprayed on the plants and delivered to the soil twice during the growing season, in the very beginning and then in the middle. So 99% of the water that the plants got was was rain water. But this water with the frequency information was so powerful that the plant didn't need a lot. It got the signal from the frequencies and said, oh, okay, and then just kept growing and responding as if the frequencies were there the whole time. They've tested wheat, rice, corn. They did a variety of crops in a variety of farms with different quality soils. And it seemed that the energized water was more effective the worse the soil condition was, which is interesting. But nonetheless, they did get a variation somewhere between 25 and 40%, depending on the environmental conditions. Oh, also worth mentioning that they soaked the seeds in this water. So if you don't want to go to all the trouble of delivering the frequency water to the plant, there would be a certain amount of benefit just by treating the seeds before you plant them and then just let them grow. So this is a kind of typical in-house experiment. Of course, again, the frequencies are proprietary, and before you do a field study, you have to do these kind of studies. So these are the kind of yields that they were getting. Obviously, the one on the right was treated, and again, the plants on the right were treated, and then again, the plants on the right were treated. See, that's how you spell control in Lithuanian, apparently. I don't speak Lithuanian, but I have been to Lithuania. So in the end, they were able to increase the yield in a field situation using a completely different set of frequencies than the company in California, and even a different way of delivering the frequencies, just using electromagnetic field without all the other ones. So in conclusion, we can say that water carries energy. Water can deliver specific frequencies, which are remembered by the water, which is kind of cool because you got some leeway. After you treat the water, you don't have to immediately pour it onto the plants. You've got a little leeway to take the water and then put it on the plants. That's how a scientist treats a plant, right? Okay. And then that water can be imprinted is the technical word, with very specific frequencies. And that the hypothesis is that the energy in the water resonates with the energy in the plant and then stimulates the growth, so that the frequencies that you put in the water ultimately end up in the plant, and those frequencies have specific biochemical and metabolic effects on the plant, which end up either increasing the growth or the chemical constituents of the plant or the roots, or as I said. So that's the conclusion from the three studies. And I wanted, since I only have 45 minutes, I wanted to make sure that we have plenty of time for questions, because I know this audience is really keen and you guys are here wanting to hear about water. So I wanted to stop there and give us plenty of time for questions. Okay? Hopefully there'll be questions.
Right.
Okay, start in the left. I'm a left kind of guy. Oh, you're going to do a microphone.
Sorry.
Thanks for the talk. That was great. A couple years back, I got pretty obsessed with studying the science behind homeopathy and just how ridiculous it is that we see this effect, but mainstream science kind of refuses to acknowledge it, even though it's right in everyone's face. And the reason they refuse to acknowledge it is because, you know, they shout, there's no mechanism. You know, we don't know the mechanism for how this possibly could work, which isn't really how science works anyway, I don't think.
Well, but they never understood how aspirin worked.
Exactly.
For 20 years, they were using it. They didn't know how it worked.
Yeah. So my question to you is, do you or any of your colleagues have any hypothesis for mechanisms? I've heard something described that water can act as a long-term kind of crystalline structure over long distances. I don't really understand that, but I was just wondering your thoughts on that. How do we take the science further with this to understand it better?
Well, I would say how do we take the science further would be exactly for you guys to take this technology and use it. But the question about the mechanism is an interesting question for all the scientifically minded folks in the audience, but whatever, I'll still answer your question. So one theory is that the water gets trapped in these clusters, the information in the water gets trapped in the cluster. The problem about that theory is that the water clusters are constantly breaking apart and reforming. They don't last very long in that structure. So if you were going to store information in a structure, this would not be the ideal structure to store it, because you store it and then it dissolves and then the energy goes away and then it reforms. More recently, there's a group of Italian physicists who started studying, asking that very same question. And it's funny because he's been working on this for years, and then I met him at a conference, and I said, well, what about homeopathy, and what about information storage in water? And the answer that I got was, water is so complicated. We are so far from answering a question like that. We don't even know how basic physics of water works. So maybe give me 10 years, and then when we figure out the basics, we can start asking esoteric questions like, how is information stored in water? But nonetheless, his theory that he developed, which has experimental evidence, is that there are other structures, not as large as this, but actually at the quantum domain, where information can be stored. And these are called quantum domains. And if you look up the word quantum domains and water, you'll find that research. And so the theory is that the information is trapped within these quantum domains, along with a special kind of electromagnetic field that gets trapped. And when you trap energy in an environment like that, it changes its properties enormously. And it turns out that this phenomena can explain some of the basic physical properties of, all these different properties of water that you can measure can be explained by the quantum domains. And then unfortunately, the scientist died, but before he died, he did talk a little bit about the water memory phenomena. So that's my short answer to that question.
I have a comment and a couple questions. One about the physical structuring of water. I'm particularly interested in scaling solutions. So I've seen a couple where they actually have like a pipe, they run it through like the water through it with the magnetics
right.
in a particular thing,
right.
and a different version, a different company that uses kind of special minerals that have that are transmitting the properties to it and such. And so those would be scaling type solutions, and they talk about it as physical structuring that basically gets rid of or causes the calcium and this kind of thing to not precipitate onto the walls.
Right, that's called
and
descaling.
And then have descaling.
Descaling, right.
My questions then are either of the two examples that you gave, are they starting to scale out for farmers to be able to use?
No. These frequencies were not designed to inhibit precipitation of calcium. These frequencies were designed to stimulate the growth. You could use frequencies in the water to do that, but magnetic magnets work so efficiently to do exactly what you just described that people haven't really started exploring with frequencies because the magnets themselves work so well.
Well, I was more thinking for the growth properties of the two examples that you get, are those products, like the one that did the testing that was done in Northern California, are they spreading it now? Are they using it in larger facilities and so on?
Well, that's an interesting question. One of the reasons I'm presenting it is so that people know about that technology. It's up for grabs, but I got to say that, unofficially, that the plant that we grew was marijuana. Okay, everybody heard that? Okay, so because Northern California, that's what they grow. they grow vegetables too, but not many in comparison. No, so the point being that the technology is available for anybody who might contact me and I'll get you in touch with the folks. But again, the point is that these are frequencies that are designed to stimulate the growth, not descaling.
Sure. No. And then the factum as well. You said it was used on a variety of crops.
Right.
Is that spread? Is that being made available
well? That could be available. They're still perfecting that technology. They have a grant from the EU to develop the technology. And ultimately, you want to. Well, you know, the marketing of that is not determined yet. Do you want to sell the device, or do you want to sell the treated water? Or do you want to sell the treated seeds, for that matter? I have a colleague who figured out how to treat seeds with sounds, and just the sounds of nature. But the trick is, you have to do it in the right sequence. You know, the birds have to come before the wind, or the other way around. I forget what he said. and if you do it in the right order and for the right duration, then he gets like 300% stimulation of the final. Yield. So your seeds become, you know, threefold more potent than before they were treated with the sound. And that is commercially available. But these technologies are new, and you'd almost be better off just, no, the commercial, it's not really commercially available yet. But if you're interested, contact me and I'll put you in touch with the folks. Okay, good question.
Hi. We're putting in a pond and a well for extra water for our cows. In listening to all this these last 2 days, I'm wondering, in my theory then, will the pond have better energy for the cows since it's out in the sun and has minerals than a well that's down in a dark place? Or
well,
just theoretically, possibility.
The environment makes a big difference. So if you are starting, theoretically, if you're starting with the same exact water and you put it into both of those places, neither would actually be particularly good because it's not moving water. To make the water living, you have to move it, and you have to move it in a special way that Schauberger figured out, and then it will become alive. So stationary, stagnant water is dead.
All right, I didn't preface it. All of my water in my farm is spring fed.
Okay, so it's coming from it may start as living, but if it sits there in the well for months at a time and doesn't get sunlight and doesn't move, then it will die. Relatively speaking. So that would be the best bet to use. The well water, you can't exactly, well, you just to vortex, somehow or other, figure out how to vortex the water, and then either one would be fine. But exposure to sun is good. Sun is a good thing, so I would say the pond would be better than the well.
I was wondering if you knew of any companies. I was at a library and I was looking up about water filters, and there was a company called PureFec. They claimed that theirs was the only one that cleaned out radiation. But I'm also wondering about something that would imprint it, energize it, maybe run through some sort of vortex, something you can put in your home. I spoke with Phil.
I was going to say, contact Phil Jones. He's got several devices that are on the market. In Europe, they have several devices on the market.
Like Grandeur or something like that.
Grandeur is another. Yeah, there are actually many.
Some run through magnets.
Right. And as to which, my personal opinion is that each type of plant is going to require a different kind of structuring and a different set of frequencies. And unfortunately, we don't have the research yet to be able to say, well, what are you growing? Oh, you're growing fruit, or you're growing strawberries specifically. You know, you need this kind of water. Go to that website and order it. We don't have that yet. So ultimately, you're going to have to do some experiments yourself with your crop, your soil.
I'm thinking of it in terms of cleaning up water for human consumption.
Oh, for human consumption.
Something for in the house.
Okay.
And for energizing it, increasing its vitality, maybe imprinting thought forms.
There's a lot of stuff on the market, and probably the ones that Phil has discovered are probably good. I know Gaia, has a water found it. I mean, the folks from Gaia asked me to research the best drinking water for humans. So I'm going, well, okay, so what is healthy water? Well, what is a healthy person, for that matter, that doesn't have disease? Okay, well, everyone's got some issue. and it's an interesting question, and there really isn't enough science to say, well, for the plants. And it's for the people, most of the work has been done on people, and drinking the stuff that Phil talked about would be your best.
Yeah, because all the filter systems, as far as I'm concerned, because water does have a memory, you're stuck with having to replace a filter, and it's passing through stuff that,
The filter won't get rid of the information. The filter will get rid of the chemical. Right. To get rid of the information, you have to zap it with the opposite frequencies. So every chemical has a set of frequencies, or say one frequency, and then you have to impose onto the water the inverse of that frequency to eliminate and erase the memory of that frequency, of the original.
So you would have to have the well water tested and find out
what chemicals that you want. Then you got to go find the frequencies of the chemical, and then you got to invert the frequencies, and then have a whole set of signal generators to broadcast that frequency back to the water. So it's a little complicated, and there really is nobody doing that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, maybe next year when I come, if I come back, we can talk about this again, and there will be some commercial products on the market. So look at that, 45 minutes exactly. I don't want to keep anybody too long. I'm here for the rest of the evening. Anybody want to pin me down and talk specifics, that's great, and thank you all for coming.